back to school and the new security efforts on campus. Armed guards and police greet students and teachers to a new school year in South Florida. What are the new security measures, and how are schools meeting the demand to have armed protection? School security is a big issue on the ballot this month for Broward County voters. There are 5 contested seats on the Broward School Board and a referendum asking property owners to increase taxes to pay for school security and raise teacher pay. Also, turning off the tap on mobile showers for the homeless in Fort Lauderdale. It's the most recent effort the city has taken discouraging helping the homeless. The mayor of Fort Lauderdale will join us here on the Florida Roundup. You can join us as well with your phone calls all ahead on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Pencils, notebooks, check. Student ID, armed protection. Welcome to a new school year for Florida public schools. Classes are underway in Broward and Palm Beach and Monroe counties now. They begin Monday in Miami-Dade. Every new school year brings certainly its own hopes and challenges, but this one is different. After the Marjory Stoneman Douglas school shooting, Florida law now requires a police officer or armed guard at every public school. That includes West Hollywood Elementary in Broward County, where Superintendent Robert Runcie visited late Wednesday afternoon.
I am always so pleased to see the excitement on the students' faces, that they're having fun. We've had so much of a law enforcement presence there. I've seen them in classrooms. They've been interacting with kids.
In Miami-Dade County, the school district has been negotiating with municipal police departments to provide police officers at schools. Late Thursday afternoon, in fact, the district in the city of Miami just announced a tentative deal to have Miami police officers at elementary schools within the city. So here we go. As a new school year is underway in South Florida, have you seen police or armed guards at your neighborhood school? How are the police departments and school districts dealing with this new requirement for armed protection? And does it make kids and teachers and faculty any safer on campus? This is where we begin this week on the Florida Roundup, 800-743-WLRN. Your phone calls, 800-743-9576. You can also send us your thoughts on social media or on Twitter at WLRN. Is our handle there. Patty Mazzei is the Miami Bureau Chief for the New York Times, back with us in studio. Colleen Wright watches education for our partner, the Miami Herald. She's with us. And Katie Swatowski is WLRN's Broward County reporter. Katie, let me begin with you. You were outside Marjory Stoneman Douglas on Wednesday morning. What was the sense from the students and from their parents about the show of force, the security that you could see there?
So, I mean, as expected, there was a heavy law enforcement presence. You could see police officers everywhere. I saw a lot of them directing traffic because it was a little bit of a traffic apocalypse. But outside of the media frenzy, I mean, you saw students walking into class, but it was, you know, the big new ID badges, backpacks. You know, they're hand-checking these kids' backpacks right now because there's not another way to get them in a secure fashion. So it seemed to me, I got the sense that people were nervous, but, you know, they were also hopeful and just kind of trying to dodge the media frenzy on the front lawn.
There was a lot of attention on Stoneman Douglas, and rightfully so, on Wednesday as it came back to school. But what about other schools that you traveled to in Broward County? What did you experience there?
Same thing in terms of, I saw lots of police officers, especially at West Hollywood Elementary. Locked gates are a new measure that a lot of schools have adopted. So before, where you could drive into a parking lot as a visitor and then walk into the front office and check in, now it's, all these gates are locked. You kind of got to pull over to the side and call a number to have someone come out and get you. That's one way schools are dealing with it.
Patty Mazzei, you have reported on this in this community. What are some of those other changes that parents and students are seeing on campus this year?
Well, the administrators like to use the phrase, which I hate, school hardening, which is to
Why don't you like that word? That is the word you hear from legislators and law enforcement.
I don't know. It's so hard to get details from a phrase like hardening.
What does that mean?
You know, buildings are hard. What are we talking about? So in Broward, they're talking about security cameras, not just what they had before, but more of them, better system. They're talking about the entrance restrictions that we were just talking about. They're talking about having the usual school resource officers who are police officers, more of them, especially in middle school and high schools. For example, Marjory Stoneman Douglas used to have one. Now it has 3. And then there's this state law that requires every public school to have an armed guard. And that's not necessarily a police officer. It can be a trained person who is carrying a weapon, and that has really, I think, been the crux of the wrinkles that we're seeing. It is expensive, and it is difficult to sort out the logistics in a short period of time to get all of these guards in place.
Short period of time. Let's talk a little bit about that, Colleen, right here, because this law, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act, was signed into law back in April. Here we are after a full summer off and students coming back, faculty coming back, teachers coming back. We saw reports last week that as Broward was preparing that some schools may or may not have this armed protection. Police may not have enough resources. You've been reporting the last 24 hours about negotiations that are happening between the Miami-Dade County Public School District and different municipal police departments. What can you tell us about this?
Right. So it's Hail Mary time. So basically at this time, yesterday, on Thursday in the morning, there were a few cities or about 60 schools that still did not have a designated officer at their schools. Miami-Dade actually went the more expensive route. Some people would say that that's the safer route to have a sworn law enforcement officer. Broward did not have that luxury and went the armed guards option. But as of yesterday, they were still waiting on City of Miami, which was the bulk of those 60 schools. City of Miami Chief of Police went on the record and saying that it couldn't guarantee that they would be there all day. You know, City of Miami has some high crime areas, mm-hmm. and the chief just couldn't guarantee that if someone was getting robbed around the corner, the officer was expected to leave.
But now, then late yesterday, the school district, and I think the city came out, say, bell to bell.
They did, yes. Right. So just in a matter of 6 hours or so, City of Miami turned around and said, we can make it work. They kind of brokered a deal that said, you know, the school's police force has its own. They've been recruiting their own officers, and they can use the City of Miami's Police Academy to kind of speed it up, because those officers will then relieve City of Miami officers when they go through the academy. Miami Gardens also came through at the end and said, you know, we also agree to a tentative deal. So now, as of today, as far as I know, there's 30 elementary schools, and in about 15 minutes, the school district will sign a $20 million deal, agreement with the Miami-Dade County Police Force to staff about 120 officers in its schools.
Now, it's important to talk about the kinds of schools we're talking about. Traditionally, in South Florida, you've seen, as you mentioned, Patty, the school resource officer at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. That was somebody who was there, we know, famously or infamously, because of the details that came out from the shooting. Oftentimes, middle schools will have armed protection of one kind or another. We're really focused, and the law is focused, on all schools, and that has meant, traditionally, Colleen, now really elementary schools getting this kind of armed protection, right?
Right. So at least as far as I know, in Broward and Miami-Dade, most middle and high schools have been covered by a school resource officers. These agreements have been in place for years. School resource officers are not a new idea. The law now calls for every public school. That includes charters as well. And so when we talk about putting guards in schools last minute, we're mostly talking about elementary schools and kindergarten through eighth grade schools.
305-995-1800 or 800-743-9576. Have you seen some of these school protection officers, SRO, school resource officers, or for that matter, armed guards or sworn police officers in Broward or Palm Beach or Monroe counties as school has gotten underway? What are you talking to your kids about in Miami-Dade as you prepare to go back to school on Monday? Here on the Florida Roundup, this is where we begin our conversation this week, 800-743-9576. Katie Swietlowski, you did travel to an elementary school. What was the reaction like to the show of force, for lack of a better phrase, there?
So it was very difficult. I got there sort of close to the end of the school day. The bell was about to ring, and I followed the superintendent on a visit. So I got to go inside, and that meant having someone come unlock the gate for me and parking on the swale and trying to get in. Then you go through a series of gates to get to the front office at West Hollywood. You've got to show ID, get your picture taken, sign in, have someone come get you. So it's an extensive visitor process. But what I saw in terms of police officers is in addition to outside directing traffic and just stationed at all points around the outside of the school, there were several police officers that were making their way, presumably because it was the first day of school, and introducing themselves to students. Mm. So two or three police officers were constantly following the superintendent into classrooms. And as he was saying, hi, nice to meet you, I'm your superintendent, You know, the police officers were right behind him to say, hi, nice to meet you. We're the police that are here. So even into second graders, they're trying to familiarize themselves with these kids now.
It's a new introduction for a new school year, Colleen. I mean, these, you know, and oftentimes some of these elementary schools, you may be familiar with a police officer directing traffic, you know, during school drop off and school pickup, but not on campus in a way that's very visible like it could be now.
Right. And so, you know, the role of school resource officers, like I said, that's not a new concept. In the older grades, like middle and high schools, they're supposed to, you know, promote this positive image of law enforcement, you know.
Officer friendly. For those of us of a certain age, we remember that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. And in elementary schools, you know, at least, you know, when it comes to complying with this new law, the whole idea of this law being in place is to have officers fend off active threats. It's not really to promote. I mean, that's maybe like a nice byproduct, but. And we're not even sure what exactly the role is here. Some of them, if there is a designated school resource officer, there might be more of that in some of these cities or maybe the county where there's just officers there until they're relieved with school's police force. There might not be that same dynamic. We hope to get some of those answers later today.
Patty Mazzei, what does the law require of specifically? Somebody there bell to bell, as we, you know, had the discussion that in the negotiation that Colleen was reporting on late yesterday between the Miami-Dade County Schools and the City of Miami.
I don't believe it spells out bell to bell, which is why not just in South Florida, we also saw in Central Florida, police departments were saying, well, we'll have somebody at these elementary schools part of the day. The problem here is a public relations problem, which is, well, that's not what we thought we were getting.
That's right.
And the scramble is problematic because of this training that you were talking about. School resource officers are not just cops assigned to a school dealing like they would with street crime or anything else. They are supposed to be members of the school community who help catch things before they happen in a way, right? Like they know the students. They know when something is up. And
they're part of the school community, right, the educational
environment. You have to train people to it's a different job.
Yeah.
And so if you're just temporarily assigning a police officer, they're not going to have that sort of training. And here we're in like sort of a new place, which is elementary schools, even younger kids. You don't want kids to feel scared of going to school. And in some communities, the safest place is the school. I mean, I think we should say that school shootings remain rare and schools remain safe by and large. And so when you are in a neighborhood where the school is the safest place, the idea of just introducing police untrained in how to deal with children and how to make it a comfortable environment for learning is problematic to some educators. And they worry that not only the police officers, but this idea of introducing more metal detectors and things like that, it disproportionately tends to affect less affluent communities, communities of color. And it's concerning. I mean, this is why it's an ongoing debate.
You mentioned metal detectors, and Katie Swatowski, I know metal detectors have been part of this conversation since...
They've come up a lot this week.
Yeah, it came up a lot last week, Tuesday, on the eve of the school year beginning in Broward County, they came up.
So the idea was from the Broward County School Board, hey, we're going to put metal detectors at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. It's going to happen. And, you know, just before school started, you know, the superintendent kind of had to back out of that and say, hey, you know, we paused this plan. There's an indefinite hold on this idea to have metal detectors. And part of the reason is for that is the county got a new report done by an independent safety consultant called Safe Havens International. And they presented to the school board earlier this week and said, look, from what we found, you're having a problem with what makes people feel safe versus what will actually keep people safe. And that idea comes down to the consultant saying, you know, without extra measures like patting down each student or doing, you know, the TSA style, take off your belts and shoes, metal detectors aren't going to keep a gun from getting inside. They're just not effective without extra steps.
And they create a bottleneck of 3,000 kids going to school
every
day.
Marjorie Stoneman, that's right. Yeah, even if you have an elementary school of 300 kids, you're going to have a difficulty. And for any parent knows what drop-off and school pickup is like already, you're adding yet another additional delay for the school day.
So for now, what Marjorie Stoneman Douglas did, at least, you know, on the first day, is they are still individually checking kids, but it's, you know, brief backpack checks and, you know, making sure you're wearing your ID badges.
Is it still the clear backpacks that we saw in the days and weeks after the shooting?
No. Students are allowed to have, you know, after a lot of backlash from the kids.
The unpopular clear backpacks.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, the fish tanks. you know, kids were like, this is not going to work for us. It invades right. privacy. So now they are allowed to have their own backpacks of choice.
Gotcha. School safety here on the Florida Roundup as school is underway. Public schools starting this week in Broward and Palm Beach County and Monroe County, starting on Monday in Miami-Dade, all operating under a new state law passed in the wake of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school tragedy of requiring armed protection on campus for Florida public schools. 800-743-9576 is our telephone number, 800-743-WLRN. Speaking with Katie Swietlowski, WLRN's Broward County reporter, Patty Mazzei, the Miami bureau chief of the New York Times, and Colleen Wright is along with us, who covers education for our partner, the Miami Herald. Colleen, I want to talk about the issue of dollars here, because it is important. As Patty mentioned, it's expensive, this requirement that the Florida legislators passed and the governor signed in the wake of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. You mentioned the Miami-Dade County Public School District today on Friday announcing a $20 million agreement essentially with the county for Miami County Police to protect elementary schools in unincorporated Dade County. Where do these dollars come from?
That's a really good question. So, of course, it is expensive, roughly, and this varies from agency to agency. School resource officers cost about $100,000 with between salary and fringe benefits and the car and uniform and everything, and the gun, everything it costs. That's a lot when you multiply by, you know, all the schools in your area. For example, for an unincorporated Miami-Dade, we're talking roughly 115 or so. So to sweeten the deal, because as you can imagine, a lot of municipalities were kind of reluctant to put up that cash, the school district said, you know what, we're going to use some of our safe schools allocation. That's some extra money that the legislature doled out to school districts, and said, you know, for every school you cover, up to a certain extent, because they can't give the county all the money, they'll get roughly $35,000 per school, and that's supposed to help offset some costs.
So those are dollars that are going from the school district to the county for the law enforcement protection at schools in unincorporated Dade County.
And municipalities that signed on. So, for example, like the Miami Beach gets part of that deal. Right. City of Miami will now get part of that deal. Doral, North Miami Beach, Hialeah Gardens, Miami Lakes, and the county.
All those separate police departments
right.
that do have agreements with the county
yes.
District, right, to provide that kind of protection. 800-743-9576 will begin in Boca Raton. Hannah is on line one. Hannah, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. I just feel like we're putting our energies in the wrong place. We're focusing on symptoms as opposed to the causes of these things. Clearly, the officers don't do anything because they did so much at Marjorie Stoneman. So this is a waste of money and energy and money spent in the wrong place.
So you certainly the issue around the school resource officer around Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and the lack of an immediate response during that shooting and the moments that it began certainly have been covered well. Where would you like the energy to be placed, Anna?
I would like it to be put into counselors and people who work with the students, who pay attention, into integrating local, regional, state, and national officers and police departments so that people can communicate to each other. Because time after time after time with these shooters, you hear, oh, someone noticed, but it was overlooked, or someone didn't communicate with someone else. That's the problem. Flags were seen with these people every time, but it failed to be escalated and it failed to be acted upon because those who need to be acting on them aren't getting money.
Hannah, we appreciate the thoughts from Boca Raton. Thanks for joining us on the Roundup. Thanks so much. Katie Swietlowski, I want to put her broader point to you since you were on campus at Marjorie Stoneman. And what were the resources there other than the security resources? This, again, show of force that was there the first day. And some of which is going to continue, the fences and the gates and the security cameras and the new exterior locks that you can only open up from the inside, all of those kinds of things. But what about the social services and that fabric of social assistance for the students and for the faculty?
Yeah, so Hannah makes a really good point because – you know, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas is doing some things to keep some of that focus on students' lives inside of all these gates. They have two portables that they're using for wellness centers. So they do still have counselors, therapists, and therapy dogs available for group and individual therapy sessions for MSD students for the time being. I don't know how long that's going to last. It was quite an extra cost for the district to make sure Marjorie Stoneman had this in place.
I was just going to ask if that was something that was coming from the district or something the school itself somehow was funding.
The school board absolutely had a hand in that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, that's just one school. So Hannah makes the point of who's watching other kids who have these flags at other schools. And so that's a big concern.
Yeah.
I want to make a point here, though,
that in
the bill that passed, you know, not only did it require, you know, an armed guard or an officer in every school, but there also was language in there about, starting a threat assessment team, you know, at every school to look out for these kinds of kids. It also added mental health counseling dollars for that as well. You know, we can go back and forth all day, you know, instead of putting money toward, you know, arming a school employee or someone at the school or an officer, you can put that towards, you know, change the law and put that towards, you know, that's certainly part of the debate. But, you know, there that bill was more than just requiring an officer in every school. There were stipulations in there for threat assessment and mental health counseling.
That's a great point, Colleen. And Patty Mazzei, what about, you know, the uniqueness of this in Florida? And how much is kind of the rest of the country looking at the Florida response after Parkland as it relates to school security?
Well, I tried to go by phone to call the school districts that had also been affected by shootings and in rural areas, for example. And everyone has had a different approach. The idea of having more armed personnel, more guards, more police, I would say, is across the board. If not being implemented, then under consideration, right? In Texas, where Santa Fe High School, there was a shooting. They received a bunch of donated police equipment, and they're not going to expand the size of their, you know, police force for schools. There is a district in rural Southwest Virginia where even before Parkland, they had been talking about, like, we don't have enough school resource officers and no money for them. Our schools are falling apart, and we'd rather invest in new roofs and things like that. And so they are actually letting teachers with concealed carry permits volunteer for extra training to carry on campus. To the caller's point, it is harder, it takes longer to create better systems to deal with kids' mental health. And I spoke to administrators in Florida who said, we are working on it. We are working on complying with that part of the law, but that is slower than getting more police officers. That's just the reality. But you do have a lot of teachers who sort of question, like, should we really be spending money on school resource officers rather than on counselors? I think it is hard to integrate systems. So you can improve the mental health resources in one school, but integrating that with talking with police, with talking with outside counselors, with talking with the State Department of Children and Families, with that is a problem. It's like the interagency communication. I have not seen a plan being put in place yet in Florida that will sort of ease those problems that were identified after the Stoneman Douglas shooting.
After the Stoneman Douglas shooting, absolutely. 800-743-9576 in Miami. Anthony, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hi, guys. I know this is very serious coverage, but I just noticed a trend in not only your show, but the other LRN shows and NPR shows where you guys seem to be, like, laughing off certain topics, like the backpacks and just, like, I don't understand why you need to include brevity into your discussion when this is a very serious topic.
So,
you know,
just to be clear, like, Anthony, what we were talking about in the weeks after the Stoneman Douglas shooting, when the kids went back to school with clear backpacks, of which the students themselves made light of and made fun of, and there were some serious considerations around privacy issues that we talked about at that time on this program. And so the question about whether or not those backpacks were still in place is a bona fide. And I asked the question. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. And Katie Swatowski answered the question that no, those backpacks are no longer in play.
And you both laughed at it and made a joke about it. And then she was laughing at some other statement before that. I just don't see the need you guys just stay serious, okay? Stay serious for an hour. It does respect to everybody involved on a serious issue.
All right, so you called to actually talk about something else, according to the producer, so we'll let the audience know that Anthony has apparently some trouble with...
Women being told not to laugh.
I guess so. That as well as just, frankly, being honest with a call screener about what he wants to talk about. Nonetheless, the phones are open for your conversation. 800-743-9576. Colleen Wright, I know you've got to run for this announcement in Miami-Dade schools, but what do we know? Is Miami-Dade parents are ready to go back to school on Monday? What do we know about the presence of armed protection, sworn police officers or not, at Miami-Dade County Schools?
Sure. So I think, you know, it's kind of like a rock and a hard place, right? I mean, I don't, you know, Patty earlier brought up a point about communities of color being unsure about having an officer there, mm-hmm. and that negative effects. And I think some of those concerns are still out there. But I think, you know, the law is what it is. You know, you have to have either an armed guard, and that could have been someone who maybe was a coach, some kind of school personnel, or a sworn police officer. And Miami-Dade went the route, an expensive route, have at least a trained sworn officer in there versus a security guard like in Broward. I think people are at least, parents at least are relieved that they're going that option, that at least it is an officer and not another unsworn guard. We'll just have to see how it plays out. And, these are last minute deals being played out. But, you know, now we're down to at least 30 schools, mm-hmm. I believe, as far as I know. And so school officials are positive and pretty optimistic that's going to all work out by Monday. So we'll see then.
Just as a point of clarification for all three of you, if you have the answer to this, when we're talking about armed protection, if schools don't go the route of the sworn police officer with the municipality, an armed guard, is this a working for a private firm? Is this somehow, is there
school
some kind of vetting
involved? School
districts
have created a position for an armed guard, and they are partnering
so they work for
with,
the school district.
Yes,
okay.
They're partnering with sheriff's offices and police departments to train them. They can set their own sort of job descriptions. So, for example, in Broward, they were giving preference to people who had past law enforcement or military background. Mm-hmm.
And they're working in Broward heavily with BSO and getting trained.
Correct. And they also have put limitations on those jobs. So they are not supposed to do anything. They don't have power to arrest anybody. They're not police officers.
Right.
So they are there, like Colleen said, to respond to a threat if need be. But it is, I think we're going to have to just see how it plays out and see if it, you know, where does that boundary get crossed? And when you work at a school, you sort of become part of the school family.
Yeah.
And how's that going to work in practice?
Yeah.
And one thing I do want to point out, too, is that Miami-Dade has its own school's police department. Broward does not.
That's right.
The sheriff's office actually recommended that Broward School start its own, but there was no time and it was going to cost something like, I don't know, $20 million. I don't remember the exact amount,
sure.
But it was a lot of money. So it's just a different dynamic, I think, going out in both counties.
Colleen Wright covers education for our partner, the Miami Herald. You heard from Patty Mazzei there as well, the Miami Bureau Chief for the New York Times, and Katie Swatowski covering Broward County for us here at WLRN. To all three of you, thank you, Katie. I think you're going to be back later on the program.
Yes.
Talking about homelessness in Fort Lauderdale. Still to come, though, right away, school safety on the ballot in a big way this month in Broward County with 5 school board races and a referendum on the ballot to raise property taxes. We'll talk about it next on the Roundup, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. While the races to get the Republican and Democratic nominations for governor get most of the attention, some of the more influential races on your neighborhood and your pocketbook are on the ballot in Broward County. 5 of the 9 seats on the Broward School Board are up for election this August, and a ballot referendum asks voters to raise property taxes to pay for school security and teacher pay. Early voting in Broward County begins on Saturday. So how could the school board be reshaped by the Stoneman Douglas shooting? Will you pay more for property taxes, for school safety, and for teacher pay? 800-743-WLRN. Still talking about school security, talking about voting, talking about teacher pay now here in South Florida. 800-743-9576. Katie Swatowski still with us. Patty Mazzei still with us with the New York Times. And Jessica Bakeman, our education reporter here at WLRN, joins us now. So, Jessica, this is a crowded ballot for school district races, school board races, important races in every election, but a lot of attention this year because of Stoneman Douglas, and not just because of the tragedy there, but because there are candidates that are directly running with direct experience. Tell us about those races.
Right. So as you mentioned, 5 out of 9 seats are contested right now. And there are candidates in running in each case. There's an at-large seat, which is countywide, and that is currently held by Donna Korn, who is trying to hold on to her seat. And she is facing, one of the candidates she's facing is Ryan Petty, whose daughter Elena was killed in the shooting. And there's another seat, the seat that includes Parkland and Coral Springs, that is currently held by Abby Friedman, but she decided not to run for re-election. And one of the people running there is Lori Alhadeff, whose daughter Alyssa was killed. And there's another Marjorie Stoneman Douglas student actually also running in that race. She didn't lose a child, but she has a couple of kids who go to school there. Her son lost a really good friend. So there is going to definitely be a lot of talk about, and there has been already, of course, about school security. That's a major issue in this. And I think also Robert Runcie and like his fate is really the issue here. Especially with that race, for example, with Lori Alhadeff, like the parent that is running against her, Tennille DeCosti, is being supported by Abby Friedman. And the people that I'm talking to say that, you know, she would be supportive of Robert Runcie. And, you know, there was a press conference recently where a bunch of parents of victims.
Just this week.
Right. Where they were pushing back and saying that there needs to be change on the school board. And they haven't directly said, like, we want the superintendent out. But I think that that is his fear, or the, you know, his supporters' fear, that that's what they will eventually push for if they get that turnover that they're wanting.
The tension is so strong. I mean, even at the corner of that press conference earlier this week, it was, you know, Broward County's black elected officials. It was part of the school board. It was local business and economic development agencies. They're all gathering there to support Runcie and declare their support of him. And a biker in downtown Fort Lauderdale rides by and just screams in the middle of the press conference, "Fire Runcie." So that tension is palpable whether or not you're plugged into this.
And at the school board meeting last week, I mean, there was just a yelling match across the dais, which is pretty unusual. I mean, I hadn't been in a school board meeting in a while, but
Have you been to Miami-Dade County school board meetings lately?
True.
Unusual and
Broward. But they had to sort of abruptly end the meeting and go into this private session where they were going to discuss security and other things. And we sort of expected them to be back in an hour and 90 minutes. And it was like a 3-hour meeting, because you can tell that, look, the whole community is still grieving. This is a very difficult process to go through. Nobody has a guidebook on how to handle the aftermath of a shooting, and the politics are complicated, and people have different views. And I think Jessica's exactly right. Like, the importance of a school board election is not only might we see parents of victims on the school board, which would be, wow, like an incredible change, but they might support changing the leadership at the board. It would be more tumult for the district. And that's something that is a real possibility. And can you blame them for being angry? You know, I mean, everybody's really entitled to having a really strong opinion here. Mm-hmm.
I found interesting that April Shentrup was one of the parents who was a part of this, you know, call for turnover and change on the school board. She lost her daughter.
For Runcie.
Right. She lost her daughter, Carmen, in the shooting. She was a principal at an elementary school in Broward, and she had kind of gone head to head with them a while back because she had some complaints about how they handled her request for time off and request for an interim principal after the death of her daughter. And then the superintendent ends up hiring her for a newly created position at the district to oversee safety and security. So now she's a part of the administration, and yet she's also a part of this movement that could potentially lead to Runcie no longer having his job.
So what strikes me, obviously, the issue in all these races is somebody who's not on the ballot, who's not an elected official, which is the superintendent of schools of Broward County, Robert Runcie. So, Katie, when you speak with business leaders who came out with a show of support, when you see and hear from parents who came out and were critical of the generic leadership of the schools, not specifically targeting necessarily the superintendent, but I think that you read between the lines, it's got to be, if you're criticizing the leadership, you're criticizing the leader. This is a referendum on Superintendent Runcie's leadership of the schools, certainly since Marjorie Stoneman, isn't it?
Yes, and I think there's two different pools of ideas. So the parents who are criticizing leadership are looking specifically at things after February 14th, after the shooting. And business leaders and community leaders that are coming out in support of Runcie are taking a much different approach. Their initial reaction is, you know, we can't blame this one man for getting a gun in this shooter's hand. But their immediate backup is to say, like, let's look at school grades. Let's look at the big picture of Runcie's career. Let's look at the Promise Program. Let's look at, you know, all these different things that Runcie has done before the shooting happened. So I think that supporters are taking a much different approach than, you know, it's either before the shooting or after the shooting are the two sides, it seems.
Well, and you bring up school grades, and one of the interesting things that's happening right now that's really been heating up in the last like days or weeks is this race that we mentioned between Donna Korn and Ryan Petty. And so
this is the at-large seat,
right?
The countywide seat. Yeah.
So Donna Korn, who's the sitting school board member, was at an event recently and made a comment that it was an amazing school year. And that did not go over well. And she said that she was talking about the academics, obviously not talking about the tragedy that happened on February 14th, but that clip of her saying it is now in a campaign ad. And on the other side of that, you have Donna Korn going to the Sun Sentinel and saying, look at Ryan Petty's Twitter feed. Years ago, he had a bunch of tweets that were racist and anti-Semitic and homophobic. And that's becoming part of a campaign ad now, too.
And so pro-gun.
Right. And pro-gun. That's a good point. Yeah. So I think that this is one of the nastier school board races I've ever seen. Patty, you've covered a lot more than I have, though.
No, I think it's just a sign of just how raw the feelings still are because this shooting was so awful. I think we should say that at a press conference at Stoneman Douglas last week, a reporter asked Superintendent Runcie if he was going to resign, if he was going to heed some of these calls. And this was before sort of his supporters and even before the parents came out. And he said what the district needs now is continuity as opposed to a change at the top because there is so much going on between the state law and trying to change things at the school and at the school board level. His point was we have made some mistakes. We have acknowledged them and we will continue to do so. And we are listening. But now is not the time to sort of bring in an entire new administration.
And yet you talk about continuity, but one of the major problems that the parents have brought up is these reversals that have happened, the decision to go with metal detectors, the decision to not use them, the decision to have an independent investigation by a former
Secret Service
person, and then the decision not to do that. And Katie, you said that among the things that his supporters brought up to say we should keep him is the successes of the Promise Program. And then the Promise Program is also a component of the complaints against him because the district was not totally honest about, you know, the connections between the shooter and the Promise Program.
800-743-9576, talking about school board elections in Broward County in the wake of the Stoneman Douglas tragedy, as well as the ballot referendum asking for higher property taxes to pay for school security, teacher pay, among other things. 800-743-9576. Boca Raton, Jose is on line 8. Go ahead, Jose. You're on the radio. Jose, are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Hear you now. Go loud and clear.
All right. Thank you. Well, one of my questions was about this law where, you know, we're allocating resources for here are schools. Are they making any difference as far as elementary, middle, and high school? I mean, obviously, we know that perhaps high school may be more open for these incidents, but, you know, we've seen that elementary as well. But are there any differences or the allocation is the same across the board?
The allocation meaning the financial
resources,
allocation
financial
and the resources?
Allocation. Yes.
Right. Okay. So this is related to the school security issue. Are these resources of how much schools necessarily get? I mean, it's district oriented. And then the district, Patty, I think, is responsible for essentially assuring that there's compliance with this new state law.
There was some discussion early on if there was a number of students. Like, if you say per every 1,000 students, you need a police officer at a high school, for example. What Broward has said is that there is no magic formula. It's not like any research has backed up what the number is. They certainly tried to go that route by now having three school resource officers at Stoneman Douglas rather than one, and it's a school of about 3,000 students. Right. The law says one armed guard at every school.
This does bring up the issue of paying for this, and Broward County voters are going to be faced with this question, and are faced with the question as early voting begins on Saturday about whether or not they want to raise property taxes and the portion that goes to the school district in part to pay for school safety and teacher pay. Jessica Bakeman, what can you tell us just broadly about what this referendum proposes?
Sure. So the referendum, which the Broward School District has branded Secure the Next Generation, it will raise, if it's approved by voters, it would raise about $93 million a year for 4 years. And currently they have talked about allocating 72% of that for teacher recruitment and retention, so paying teachers more and raising the starting salary for teachers, up to 20% for school resource officers at district schools and at charter schools that have more than 900 students, and also additional security staff. Obviously, we know that the district is using a combination of certified law enforcement and armed guardians. And up to 8% to, this is the ballot language, quote, fund other essential instruction-related expenses, preserving important programs in district schools.
Any details on what that means exactly? Does that mean art school, band, orchestra?
I don't know exactly what they're planning to do with it. I know that, you know, Miami-Dade County Public Schools is doing a similar referendum.
Right.
And there was initially a similar, like, third
bucket
piece.
Source,
exactly. And that the school board pushed back on that. And they were like, no, we want this to be really specific. And they came up with really specific language saying that it was for this, you know, pay for teachers and for hiring school resource officers. But I know that there has been pushback and criticism of the Broward County School District for how they handled the last time they did this.
The $800 million bond
exactly
referendum.
Exactly, in 2014. And that a lot of those infrastructure upgrades that are going to be paid for through that are not done yet.
Let me take one quick call from Marco in Miami. Go ahead, Marco.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because, regarding the tax initiative, the ballot, I think that maybe it would be appropriate to have people that, the gun manufacturers and the people who have gun licenses pay for part of this tax, given that Florida property taxes already pays for a lot of things, including, you know, not only schools, but other things.
Marco, the bullet tax, so to speak. We've seen that, Patty, kind of creep into the gubernatorial campaign in terms of taxing bullets, for instance.
We have. It's an idea I have not heard proposed at the local level.
Yeah.
I think one thing we should note is the previous the $800 million
bond issue. Right, right.
The reason that has been criticized so much is because it hasn't moved quickly. And so people are skeptical of giving more money to the school district. They say, well, that is a much more complicated thing. Capital dollars,
expenditures,
construction,
fixing roofs and everything.
It's not our day bread and butter. It's going to take us a lot longer. Things were not, you know, were worse than we thought. This is going straight into our operating expenditures, what we already know how to do. But, you know, this is what happens when you have a state law passed. They gave money for the guards and for some of the things that they're requiring, but they didn't give more money for more police officers. I mean, like, so how do you balance, like, the needs and then ask people for more money and ask them to trust you again? I mean, this is a, like you said, it's important for people to vote in local elections because this stuff affects your pocketbook
Absolutely.
And your daily life.
Yeah.
I was at a Broward County School Board budget hearing a few weeks ago, actually, now, and one of the issues that came up is we're still dealing with the sixth largest school district in the country that had to cut $15 million from its administration utilities budget.
Yeah.
So where does this money come in?
Katie Swatowski covering Broward County for WLRN, Jessica Bakeman watching education for us here at the station, and Patty Mazzei, Miami Bureau Chief for the New York Times. We will continue our conversation, homelessness in Fort Lauderdale. That's next on the Roundup. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. For more than a year, a trailer of showers has made stops in Pompano Beach and Fort Lauderdale, allowing homeless people to clean up. but Fort Lauderdale shut the showers down for violating city code. 4 years ago, the city restricted efforts to feed homeless. Meantime, today, dozens of people are living in tents near the main library in downtown Fort Lauderdale. So how should the city handle those who are homeless? Katie Swatowski covers Broward County with us here at WLRN, still with us. And the mayor of Fort Lauderdale is with us now, Dean Trentalis. Mayor Trentalis, welcome back to WLRN. Did you know about the showers being shut down?
That was news to me, and I think it was news to a lot of people. And thank you, first of all, for allowing me to come on your show this afternoon. I think it's important for everyone to understand the situation that the city is confronted with. I think we're all trying to collaborate now, all the nonprofits and government agencies, to work together to try to help the homeless situation, trying to take away that encampment by the library, certainly by providing services at remote locations such as showers and bathrooms, is all part of trying to help the homeless population.
Is there room within Fort Lauderdale ordinances specifically for this mobile shower trailer to move around?
Well, we certainly need to find room, and we should not be stuck in rules and regulations that were never anticipated a mobile shower unit for helping homelessness.
And the problem with the code. Oops, sorry, Mayor Trentalis. The problem with the code right now is that it says you cannot have a shower operating outside of a structure. So that's the code we're talking about that is technically being violated by these mobile showers. And certainly the one that just shut down is not the only nonprofit that does take mobile buses around to shower and help homeless people.
Mayor, our time is tight here, but I wanted to just talk about the broader picture, and you mentioned it before your tenure as mayor in 2014. The city council passed a series of ordinances that made it more difficult to for outside organizations to feed the homeless, for instance. There was a famous incident, of course, with a longtime philanthropist who fed the homeless near the beach. Right. So I guess overall, like what is it your administration wants to accomplish when it comes to what has obviously been some difficulty in the city providing this kind of assistance?
Well, you know, every city has a homeless population, and Fort Lauderdale is like all the cities. However, unlike other cities, Fort Lauderdale has a plan in working with the county and the nonprofit, as well as the for-profit organization, under a business alliance that we have now formed to try to address each and every individual on a case-by-case basis and to take them out of homelessness. So we have formed this alliance in order to find permanent supportive housing, in order to find services that are going to try to address the needs of an individual homeless person. You can't just shove homeless people under a rug and think that that's going to be the solution.
I'm so glad you brought up the Business Alliance, Mayor Trentalis, because that seems to be the biggest sign to me that the city is taking this issue. It's just come to a head. Everyone's really frustrated. They don't know what to do about it. And so now you have some of the city's anchoring businesses trying to find more long-term housing solutions for some of the people that are living outside of the main library in this tent city.
Mr.
Right.
Mayor?
And we are part of this alliance mission is to identify apartments that exist within the city limits to be able to provide permanent supportive housing for these individuals. And we have a separate committee within this group that is engaged already to try to find enough housing to be able to accommodate the groups. And in some cases, it will be temporary housing. In some cases, it will just be a stepping stone for people to be able to go back on their own. In other cases, we have a situation where maybe we can put them into housing that they can ultimately purchase. So the point is that we are fully engaged as a city. And as far as getting back to the shower situation, we should have already on the agenda a rule change to be able to accommodate the roving shower situation, because this is an absolute necessity for our homeless population to be able to live like human beings and not be relegated to second or third class status.
So that's on the agenda for the council to consider in the weeks ahead? Not yet.
We will put it on the agenda.
All right.
Because it's unfair to expect the providers to pay the fee plus have to
do all the other things that are necessary in order to apply.
Mr. Mayor, we've got to leave it there. Mayor Dean Trentalis, Mayor of Fort Lauderdale, thank you for your time, sir, and walking
thank
through
you.
The latest on the homeless situation. Katie Swietalski covering Broward County for us here at WLRN. Finally on the roundup this week, for the students and families of Stoneman Douglas, this summer break was about healing. Dozens of incoming freshmen attended a special summer camp called Camp Shine, named after the song students wrote after the February shooting at their school. Sales of the song on iTunes helped pay for a camp where students made art as part of the healing process this summer. WLRN's Jessica Bakeman attended an after-hours songwriting workshop that resulted in this.
I can shine like a firefly in the night sky, in the sky tonight. We are going to survive, going through this fight with you by my side.
Music from Camp Shine. This was produced by The Motivational Edge, G Nova Sound, Lakshmi Ruiz, and Daniel Gong. You can hear more from our series, Stoneman Douglas Stronger. It's all on our website, WLRN.org. That'll do it for the Florida Roundup this week. Our program is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Teresa Frontato is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations at WLRN is Peter J. Mertz. WLRN's director of radio programming and our technical supervisor for our program is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling. Thanks for supporting WLRN, and thanks for listening.
Out of my zone to put up a fight. I can't run from my fears. You make me cheer. I can fight my tears. They're by my side tonight.